Hey everyone, it's Nelly here. How are you doing? This podcast was recorded in the council area known as Darabin in Melbourne. I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land, the Wurundjeri people and their elders past, present and emerging. Now for live shows, please go to nellythomas.com, follow the links. We just did another one at the Malthouse Theatre and oh, it was bloody fabulous. We've got more coming later in the year. Of course, if you want a particular guest for a live show, do let me know. I'm always open to ideas. Now, we just did another live Zoom event as well with our Patreon and Acast Plus paid subscribers. We had co-hosts Adam Richard and Alice Fraser join us, as well as some wonderful listener subscribers. We had a great chat live in real time where you get to ask questions, we shared stories, we did all the things. It was bloody beautiful. So we do those regularly, as well as bonus episodes and some other stuff for paid subscribers. So it's only $5 a month. Hopefully some of you will consider joining up because it helps me to keep the lights on. Now, last but not least, you know it, this is a sex, dating and relationships podcast for adults. If you don't like swearing, it's really going to give you the shit. So off your fuck.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice. Dear Nelly, yeah, some help would be nice. Dear Nelly, I'm eager to hear your point of view. Dear Nelly, there's a lot to explore. Dear Nelly, when you're 40 or more. Dear Nelly, so I'm hoping we can talk it through.
Welcome to Dear Nelly, Sex, Relationships and Dating from the Other Side of 40. We are joined today by an actual professor. It is Professor Claire Wright. Hello, Claire.
Hey, Nelly, how are you going?
A professor, how fancy.
I know. I'm actually technically a double professor because I hold two professorships. I'm Professor of History and Professor of Public Engagement at La Trobe University. So I'm a
That's
double.
Amazing. That's amazing. Now, do you mind if I start by asking how old you are?
I am 54 years old, turning 55 in May this year.
Yes. And you have been separated for how long?
It is just coming up to a year now that we have been physically separated. Our decision to separate came earlier, probably 9 months earlier than that, but because of our circumstances at the time, we were physically living in the same house and hadn't told our kids and or really anybody else except for a couple of close friends and kind of living as if.
Yeah, and this is a very long-term relationship.
It is. We met when we were both 19 years old.
Wow.
First journey. We married at 24.
Yeah.
And, you know, essentially separated at 54. So that's a 30-year marriage, a 36-year relationship.
Mm.
Fucking huge.
It is huge. And I've got to tell you, my brain is split in two because I want to talk to you, like I know you personally, I want to talk to you as a personal human.
Yeah.
And then the other part of my brain's like, she's a historian. right? So there is, you've got so much professional knowledge as well about the historical construction of marriage and, you know, the divorce and gender and all of those things. So let's try and do both if we
Yeah,
can.
we can do both. I'm sure we can walk and chew gum because our brains are very large and multifaceted. And yeah, you're right. And a lot of, and then the, and in a way, they're indivisible to me because a lot of,
Yes.
not necessarily the decisions, but some of the decisions and a lot of the context has been informed by a sort of historical long view.
Yeah.
And because it's not like I'm a historian of ancient African civilizations, I'm a historian of 19th and 20th century Australian history, and in particular, gender relations,
Yeah.
and in particular, power relations, which is what gender relations are, and women's political activism. And so these are all issues that I have thought about on an intellectual sphere for decades.
Yes.
And one of the incredibly complicated things for me, in a sense, has been integrating my two halves or two selves, the intellectual academic
Yeah.
part of me, which is also, in a way, the public part of me,
Yeah.
and then the, you know, the personal, psychological, private part of me that in many ways have lived out of step
Yeah.
other for a very long time.
Yeah. So in the parlance of this podcast, that first year I refer to it as sitting in the shit, right? And you and I have had discussions, you know, personally about that, about how you need to, which I think is very hard for an intellectual, if I'm frank, how you need to sit in your feelings, in your body. Yes, you can intellectualize and you can think through what's happening, but there's a real danger if you stay just in the brain. You actually need to feel what's happening. And regardless of whether you're happy about the divorce or separation, there will still be some grief and there'll be turmoil and there'll be difficulty. So how have you gone? Have you been able to do both, or did you sit in your head for a bit? Are you oscillating? How's it gone?
Well, I count myself as very fortunate, Nellie, in that you gave me that piece of advice really early on after the separation. Because, you know, grief is the word. Massive period of grieving, mourning, huge loss,
Yeah.
even if it was for the right reasons, even if I know why we got to that point in the end. And I don't know why I have a need to say this, but I'm just going to say this straight up. I mean, I don't think that we need to talk about why the marriage ended particularly. There's a million reasons why a marriage, a 36-year relationship ends. But the one thing I want to say is the reason it didn't end was because of infidelity. I think a
Yeah.
lot of people immediately go to that point
They
of
do.
somebody really fucked up here.
Yes.
And that was not. That was not part of the equation.
Yeah. No, I'm actually glad you clarified that because I think when a relationship ends that has been that long, people want a very black and white answer. Right. So she cheated, he cheated, they did that, this something happened. Honestly, Claire, in my case, I've had this multiple times, even though I came out as some version of queer at 19, because I had a long-term relationship with a man. I've multiple people like, oh, you ended it because you're a lesbian. I'm like, no, like you want a clear answer and I'm not giving it to you and you're uncomfortable.
That's right. And I also think that despite all of the gains of the women's movement and the and so here we're morphing into my historical
Yes.
but despite all of the gains of the last 100 years, 1,000 years of in women's rights, I think one of the final frontiers of feminism is that it's actually still culturally really difficult for a woman to leave a marriage if her husband is not unfaithful or
Yes.
hasn't got bruises on her face.
Correct.
And
I
so
mean, literally, can't you hear? there are multiple people, whether they say it out loud or not, who go, but why?
Yeah.
Like, why? Like, why? If it was all right for 3 decades, like,
Yeah.
then why did you go? And my response to that is always, you're allowed to go at any time for any reason.
Yeah.
Isn't that what we fought for?
Yeah. And I'll come back to that about what we fought for maybe in a minute, but I don't want to lose the train of your original question, which was about sitting in the shit. And so what I was saying is that you were really important to me early on because you gave me that advice. You said in a moment when I reached out via text to go, oh, is it supposed to hurt this much? And you said, yeah, babe, and you got to sit in the shit. You actually gave me another piece of advice, and these have been my two mantras, really, Nellie, over the past 12 months: sit in the shit and keep it classy. And really important parameters and rules to live by. And both of them are very difficult at times.
Oh,
Going
they are
back.
very, very, very challenging. Can we start with sitting in the shit and then we'll go to keeping it classy? So sitting in the shit.
Sitting in the shit for that for me, and it's interesting that you've described that as having to feel your feelings, because I interpreted it slightly differently when you said it to me. I think what I heard was, as much as your rational, argumentative, social justice, principle brain is going to want to continue to kind of play out the narratives or the dialogue of a kind of court case where you're prosecuting your position and that you're going to come out right in some way. And even when you feel like you are the one who's on trial, and I think that I have in my own mind felt like I was the one who was on trial and therefore had to find really watertight arguments as to why I should be found not guilty. And the thing for me had that was really difficult in those, and that's part of what was going on in the last years of the marriage for me. But what was really difficult for me to switch off was to say, this is not a trial. I'm not being tried for anything. And this is not actually about my brain finding loopholes. This is about my body feeling the need to, whether I'm right or wrong or any of it, just have to deal with the situation that I'm in, which sometimes is going to include being misunderstood, which is going to be not being seen in a good light. And that to me was what sitting in the shit meant. And for me, I don't think I realized this was part of the process at the beginning. It only came to me somewhere along the last 12 months journey, maybe by about 6 months, was realizing that part of the process was actually coming back into my body. I think that I had been dissociated for at least the last 4 years of the marriage. And there's a particular moment at which I think the schism happened. I can trace it to something. In which I literally dissociated from the situation. And it only was once I was kind of safely in the walls of my new apartment and sitting in the shit and processing and dealing that I realized that I had actually one of the things that had been part of that healing was that I had come back into my body.
And that's so critical because I think lots of our callers, and I've admitted this myself, and I think you're probably the same. I have misread in the past dissociation as calmness, right? So, because I'm a coper and I'm like, yep, get on with it and do this and do, I'm fine, I'm fine, I'm fine. And then you go, oh, looking in retrospect, it's like, oh, I'd tapped out,
That's right.
because
Tapped out. That's the right word.
it's so overwhelming.
You just find ways. What I realized that I had been doing for really those last years was kind of hitting my mark.
Yeah.
The choreography was all there,
Yeah.
and I knew when to move stage right and when to move stage left and
Yeah.
when to step on that X
Yeah.
and when the lights were going to come up and when the lights were going to go down. And so I could.
Encore.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah,
And
right?
when to, bring the audience to their feet
Yeah.
and I knew my lines
Yeah.
and it was like I had performed 9,000 seasons of Cats
Yeah.
and I
Yeah.
was still doing that,
And Mama's tired.
but I was watching myself from the upper boxes.
Yeah,
Watching
exactly.
myself on stage from the upper boxes, going through the motions effectively. And obviously, that's no good for yourself, but it's no good for the people around you either.
Either. No, I totally agree.
And I'm only starting to realize the impact that had on my kids, who I thought, because, I'm a coper and I had a smile on my face, and that, nobody's getting hurt by any of this. I'm doing the right thing. And it's taken me a long time, and this is part of sitting in the shit, to actually realize the effect that it has on other people, and not just my kids, my friends. I've found myself making apologies to friends for the ways that I haven't been there, that I haven't connected with them for years. And really connected, beyond the instrumental nature of maintaining friendships. And that comes with a deal of shame, but also I think the thing that I've most tried to learn and practice this past year has been self-compassion.
I was going to say, I mean, I think you have to, on some level, yes, repair is essential, but you also have to give yourself a bit of grace because these things are massive and 36 years is no joke. And that year, being only a year out, my experience, and I'm interested if it's yours as well, is that that first year, you're not just dealing with your grief. You're actually dealing with the grief of everybody around you, and they bring their own stuff to the table. So even friends, let alone family and your kids and all that kind of stuff, if they have any issues in their relationship, if they were invested in you as a couple, whatever it is, cultural overlays, there's a whole range of things. And a lot of people aren't even aware of that because it's so ingrained and they're just feeling big feelings, not recognizing that those feelings are about them. And you're managing that as well as your own grief.
That was definitely part of it. I mean, I think really the only people I've cared about in the last 12 months have been my kids. And and part of my the process that I've been through is actually saying some of those other people in the orbit, other family members, extended family members, they're just going to have to be grown-ups about this and look after themselves. And I can't
Correct.
take responsibility for that. I'm
No.
one of those many-breasted mothers that feeds many, many, many people. And I'm a tiny little person, but my wingspan is large,
Yes.
and
Yes, it is.
everybody snuggles in there.
Yeah.
And there have had to be moments where I've just had to say, I have to close those wings in around myself and hold
Yeah.
myself
Yeah,
up,
you do.
except for my kids. And I should say my kids are this year turned 27, 25, and 19. So they're obviously they'll always be my kids, but for sake of listeners, they're not little kids.
Yeah,
They're
they're adults.
adults themselves, and they have adult decisions to make about the way they are going to relate to this enormously traumatic rupture in their lives, and something that I would have really always sworn, and I did for many years, fight heaven and earth to make sure this was an experience they had to go through. My parents split up when I was 3. I have a lot of associated trauma from my childhood, which is not just a fact of the divorce, but the way that it played out in a whole range of contexts around that, the sort of childhood I had. But you know, it was really very much part of my life goal that I would provide a stable, secure base of family and home for my kids for fucking ever.
But you know what, Claire? You have. Like, it looks different. It
I think
looks
the jury's
different.
out on that one, Nellie.
I reckon you, I think there's a, I mean, I'm so conscious of my overuse of therapy speak, but I do think there's something to reframe there because you are a stable presence in their life. You have been and continue to be a fabulous mother. You don't live in the same house with their father anymore. That doesn't mean you vanished. It doesn't mean you became, you didn't fuck off and say, I'm going to join the circus. You're still there. And in fact, you're sitting in the shit with them while you're processing your own stuff. I think there is something about also teaching them how to do life, right? We don't know what's going to happen in life, whether it's divorce, job changes, illness, a whole range of things. How do you cope with this with grace? How do you keep it classy?
I agree. And you know, we all including we're not divorced. I don't know what I guess he's my ex. I haven't really found a label for him yet. We have all, I think, kept it classy, at least in on the surface and in a way that allows us to all be together in the same room, which we have. We just celebrated my daughter's 19th birthday. We all went out for dinner, had pizza and prosecco, and it's not without its challenges. Christmas was challenging, but we did manage to all get together on Christmas morning at our family home, as we have for every year of the kids as babies, toddlers, little children, teenagers, blah. We did that, and it was painful, and it was joyous, and all the things. And I think what we're both trying to do is to set out a culture whereby we can still be a family. I refuse to buy into the language that this was a failed marriage or we're a broken family.
Agreed.
I don't think anything that lasts for 35 years is
No,
failed. And
correct.
I think we're a family in the process of transforming into a different configuration. And I suppose if anything my childhood has shown me is that families can come in lots of shapes and forms, effectively have five parents, and they have all been pretty fucking classy about how they've dealt with life and dealt with me. There is the thing that binds us all together is love, and binds us as a family. And I think that we will, and my nuclear family, my family of making, family of origin, will continue to find intelligent, compassionate ways of using the love we have for each other. You know, and I might just sound so Pollyanna, you know, when
No,
I've
you don't. I don't think you do at all because I can feel how much pain there is in all of that, and particularly when you're only 12 months out. And I think, I got amazing advice early on. So, when you separated, you contacted me. My version of that is I contacted my friend Steve Allen, who's a psychiatrist and, broadcaster. And I was talking to him. That was my fear, is the kids, the kids, the kids. And he'd been separated. And he said, I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but he basically said, I never promised my child a perfect life. I promised I'd be there regardless. And that really landed with me. I would also say, if you're anything like me, there'd also been Christmases when you were together that weren't great.
Oh, of course,
So,
yes,
we forget those ones. We go to
that's
the
true.
first one, we go, oh, it's all tense because we're separating. Like, well, it was tense last year and we weren't separated. So we can kind of gloss over the difficulty of staying in something that's not working. and the impact of that on everybody.
And, you know, and something you just said about I came to you for advice early and you went to Steve, I will say that pretty much the only reason I'm doing this podcast with you today, Nellie, is not only because I love you, but because listening to other people's stories through Papa was the thing that helped me in those hard years. In the hard years of making the decision, in the hard years of when we were actively trying to save what I had identified as being problems. We were actually actively trying to address things that I finally had found the courage after 30 years to identify as being problems in the marriage and with the our relationship dynamic. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that it is a dynamic, particularly when you've been together for so long. It's not like one person is doing something to the other person. It's acknowledging that you have fallen into a dynamic and particularly a power dynamic that you have come to recognize as being dysfunctional, unsustainable, damaging,
and intractable,
and intractable, and saying it just dragging that big fat ass elephant out into the middle of the room, and saying there she is, and now what are we going to do to tame her?
And can we?
So over those 4 years before we got to the point where we both recognized that we couldn't, that we mutually came to that. We mutually came to that decision was that we couldn't. And that our time together and our shared path in that sense was over. But during those 4 years, podcasts really helped me find a way of thinking contextually and feeling part of, I don't want to say a community, that's a bit naff. But, you know, I remember particular episodes of particular podcasts and particular things that people said along the way that made a real difference to not only me giving me some comfort, but actually giving me some guidance. And I remember one thing, I will say that the podcast that probably helped me the most was the We Can Do Hard Things podcast that Glennon Doyle does with Abby Wambach and her sister. Funnily enough, I haven't listened to it once in the last 12 months.
Yeah.
It was like in my ears constantly for years, and I have not listened to it once. I can't, I just don't.
Well, you needed it. There was a certain point in time in that you needed it and then you didn't need it.
And there was one episode in which I'm pretty sure it was Martha Beck, who I also ended up listening to her podcast with Rowan Mangan called Rewilding. Bewilderment, something like that. Anyway, but Martha Beck also became an important figure to me. And she said something in one of the episodes, which is this. She said, it's the gap between the knowing and the doing where the pain resides. So firstly, that you break that down and you go, knowing what you need to do. And in a sense, the knowing of the inevitability.
Yes, it's coming.
But then the doing.
Yes.
Well, what do you do about the knowing?
Yes.
How do you bring the knowing out from the deep recesses of your gut? Or heart?
Are you ready?
How do you bring that into the light and make it concrete and real? And that's where the fear comes. And do not underestimate the fear. It's terrifying. There's never done anything more terrifying than bring that knowing into the light. And then how do you make it concrete and real and follow through with it? What lies on the other side of that precipice?
Oh, but I mean, there's so many things, but two things. One, I think when, particularly for people listening who are in a relatively recent break up and who are dealing with the expectations, the weight of expectations of others. One of the things I always say is, not in that language, but there is probably a gap in the knowing and the doing for them. And you bringing the knowing into the light and the doing is terrifying. Your literal presence, even if you're not talking about separation, divorce, relationships, mm-hmm. just sitting at the mm-hmm. table, you are a symbol of, you are the elephant, right? So yeah. That's their shit. It is not your shit.
And I've seen that, and I've seen
Same. It. Same. I've experienced it.
And I've seen it, and I now can. It's like you have a different radar.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, I've run into women who I've known who are not close friends, but, you know, I've known in a professional context or whatever. I literally ran into one woman at an airport. She was running for a plane and I was in the waiting lounge and we had like a very quick catch up. And I told her my news. It had only been I think it had only been separated for like 2 months.
Mm.
And her eyes widened. She suddenly looked like a rabbit caught in the headlights.
Yeah.
And she said, "How did you do it?"
Yeah.
What'd
you
I,
say?
In that moment, I thought, "Oh fuck, you're in the same boat."
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
And I never would have thought it from her life from the outside, but we never know anything from the outside.
And I wouldn't have thought it of yours, and you wouldn't have thought it of mine. I mean, that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Can I, taking that, because I love that framing of it from the knowing to the doing, mm-hmm. I also think what I hear and to some extent what I've experienced in some relationships is that that can also be the breaking point. So we talk about, oh, well, someone must have cheated or someone was abusive or someone was whatever. We're looking for a thing. For me, and I've experienced this a few times, it is the gap between what I've told you I need. So you know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's no, I haven't hidden it. I've worked hard. I've come to the point where I know what I need. Are you doing it? If you're not going to do it or attempt to do it, or I'm not going to attempt to do it for you, to me, that's when you go, we need to part with grace now. Because
mm-hmm.
what I need matters.
Yeah.
And historically, you know, you're the historian. We have been trained as women not to need anything. And
yeah.
it's really hard to face that. I think, I mean, this is a whole other discussion I want to get you back on. But as a feminist, it's really hard to face that you have erased your own needs.
Okay, there's two places that I want to jump off there. I think one of the very difficult parts in all that is actually identifying what your needs are.
100%.
I think that when you are raised as a woman and raised as a daughter, and then you might add into that some idiosyncratic parts of your own personal history, which are, you know, I was one of those, here's some therapy speak for you. I was a parentalized child.
Yes.
So I mothered my mother in a very codependent relationship.
Yeah.
I also mothered my half-sister who is 11 years younger than me. Then I mothered my own children. And as I said before, there's lots of others kind of nesting in wings. And then in some ways, I've always taken responsibility for all of my parents because there hasn't been a raft of siblings to spread things around. I think that when you have been raised in that culture and in those personal circumstances, you don't know what your needs are because basically, your fundamental survival need is, I just need everybody to be happy.
Yes, exactly.
As long as everybody else is happy, then I'm safe.
Yeah, that's right.
And so, you know, if you put it down to evolutionist terms or Maslow terms or, you know, in terms of the hierarchy of needs, if safety and survival are the basis of that, have learnt from a very young age that I am safe if everybody around me is happy and
Correct.
In particular they're happy with me.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And then, you know, you add 25 years of raising your own babies on top of that, which is also very basic things like somebody's crying, they need something, I need to give it to them. Then you come out at 50, and 50 was a massive turning point for me. You come out at 50 and you say, I have not got a single clue what my needs might be above and beyond keeping everybody happy.
Yeah.
And so
Because
the
you're
first step.
defined unconsciously or sometimes consciously, you're defined in relation to. And if you are a parentified child, you don't have needs because having needs is
Dangerous.
unsafe, right? It's dangerous and your nervous system is geared to like make everything better. And we call that people pleasing. We call, there's a whole range of things that we call it. But it's not specific to women, but it is very common in women and particularly of our age. And you can turn around at our age and think, I'm an intelligent person who has read books and listened to podcasts and watched movies and had discussions, and I don't know who I am, let alone what I want.
Okay. So that's interesting, the I don't know who I am. I think in the end I decided I knew who I knew who I didn't want to be.
Yes, and that's
And
a starting point.
I knew who I didn't want to be, and I could see that the decision to stay in the marriage would have been a journey towards being someone I didn't want to be.
Yes.
The interesting thing was that after I moved 900 meters down the road from our family home into an apartment, the overwhelming feeling that I had in the next few weeks, months, apart from grief and loss and absolute sheer anxiety, I woke up with a panic attack every morning, was I've come home to myself. And I did know who I was, after all.
How lovely.
I actually, she was buried in there somewhere.
Of course she is.
And so that feeling of who I am, I wouldn't have articulated it that way, but there I was, faced with waking up in a house on my own for the first time since I was 19 years old, because I'd lived in share houses from that point before we had, my partner and I had started to live together. So it was the first time I'd lived alone since I was 19. And it was the first time also I had all three children were had finished school by then. So my daughter had we'd stayed together for the last year my daughter was in school. So she'd finished school. So I had all three children out. So it was the first time in 2 decades I didn't have children in school. And you know what? You realize that you just know what you've got to do. You got to get up, you got to make the lunches, you got to even up when you pass lunch stage, you've got to make sure somebody's on time for the tram to get to their year 12 exam. And like you're just like chop, chop, chop. And you're
Oh,
conducting
I tell you what, the best way to
time.
avoid that elephant is busyness. Right? Keep
Business,
going, keep going.
necessity, all of those things. So to actually wake up and not know that, I thought after maybe about 6 months, I thought this. You know how Elizabeth Gilbert famously wrote a memoir about the first 20.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
After her separation, called Eat, Pray, Love. But I thought if I were to write a memoir, which I'm not going to do, about my post-separation time, it would be called Burn, Spill, Lose. Because literally, I would put on some apples to poach and then half an hour later start sniffing the air going,
Yeah,
what
something's
does that
burning.
burning smell?
What a metaphor.
And I would suddenly tip like a gesture towards something and tip a teacup off a table and it would spill all over the floor. And the number of things that I'd left on a tram or, dropped somewhere and just lost. It's like, it is just like all where I was in time and space, I had lost
Lost
all
it.
ballast,
Yeah,
lost
and you
all self-knowledge of where I was in time and space.
completely dysregulated. And I remember talking to you at that time when you were in some of those moments and spiraling and kind of trying to normalize it. It's not about smart and not smart. And it's not about competent and incompetent and all that. It's the reality of a seismic shift in your life, your nervous system, your heart, your head, all of those things. And just coming back to, just for listeners, I want to come back to something you said about, I knew who I didn't want to be, and just really honor that, because there'll be people listening going, oh, I don't know who I am either. That's okay. Like, you can't skip the steps. You can't go from, I want to leave and now I know who I am and I know what I want and da da da. Don't put so much pressure on yourself. Sit down and kind of go, it's enough at this point to know what I don't want, and I will work the rest out over time.
In the end, I felt like the decision, and I said earlier that it was we had made a mutual decision to separate, and we had, and that 9 months that we stayed together under the same roof, sleeping in the same bed, before we told the kids because we didn't want to disrupt our daughter's year 12. By the end of that period of time, he was a bit more like, are you sure this is what we're going to do?
Yeah.
Is this really what you want?
The
Are we
reality
really going to
came
go through with
looming.
this?
Yeah.
When it was getting closer to telling them. And that's why I felt in the end that had been sort of positioned as my decision.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that I was the one that had a decision to make. In a sense, he would have been happy to remain unhappily married, and I
Yeah.
wasn't.
Yeah.
And to me, in the end, I feel like the decision that I had to make in that circumstance was between heartbreaking and soul destroying.
Yeah. And look, we all know the narratives of various people in our lives, including the person you broke up with, let alone everyone else, will vary depending on their needs, right? So it might be easy to go, well, Claire left, rather than kind of going, well, these are the things that led up to it, and there's a certain point at which you have to just accept that you can't control that. And over time, like, I think particularly in relation to your children, over time they will have a different perspective.
Well, I'm going to be utterly frank and for the record, because I am an historian, so
Yeah.
I do like to be truthful and have
Yeah.
evidence there on the table. When we told the kids, we positioned it as a mutual decision.
Yeah.
We had a mutually approved script as to how it was going to happen and how we were going to tell the kids. And we told the kids it was a mutual decision.
That's classy.
The next day, I woke up in a complete panic and realized that I needed to own my own truth.
Ah.
And that
Okay.
if this was going to mean anything, if all this heartbreak, if all this damage, if all this trauma was going to mean something, it had to mean having a more truthful relationship to myself
Yeah.
and to the people around me. And that what we had told them wasn't really the truth, that he had agreed to that narrative, and in many ways, generously agreed to it, to save me a skin full of guilt. And so I gathered them back together and told them that Dad would stay in this marriage, but I can't. And I felt like I had to cop whatever the consequences of that were. And
This
that,
is a pointed question, but I'm going to ask it, and we can take it out if you don't like it. Were you trying to punish yourself?
I don't think I was trying to punish myself. I am very masochistic, so that is a possibility. But I don't think I was, no. And in many ways, in many times, I've actually gone back and just tried to work out whether I did the right thing.
Didn't want the facade, it sounds like then.
I didn't want there to be any more bullshit.
Yeah, great.
I could not live
Great.
with any more. I could not live with any more bullshit. That for me, part of owning my truth was that I just had to play life straight. I had to play life straighter than it had been in order than it had felt for a long time.
And
And I
also, let's be clear, they are adult children, right? We sometimes we're having this discussion about people with children who are under 10, for example, or even, young teenagers. You
totally
can't,
different story.
different story. You're there going, we need to have a relationship as adults. I'm still your mum, but we are all adults. You'd had enough of the bullshit. Let's rebuild and navigate this together truthfully.
I was walking down the street one night, with a, a sense of newfound autonomy, and independence, and strength. And I thought to myself, I'm honestly living my best life. And then I thought, no, you know what? I'm living my life honestly.
Yes.
And
Yes. And are they the same thing? To me, they are. Right? It's not about like bells and whistles and I've got more of this and I've got da-da. It's not about that. It's about are you fully integrated as a person? And you can face a lot of shit if you are fully integrated. Trying to keep all the plates spinning in the air is what unravels us.
Part of I realized that part of that living my life honestly meant also that I spent a lot of time also feeling pain.
Yeah, exactly.
And
It
that's part of
hurts.
living honestly as well. So what I
Yep.
mean by living your best life makes it sound like your life is suddenly the Coke commercial
Yeah.
you thought it could be, and the sun's
Yeah.
always shining and
Yeah. You're in a tampon ad.
it's glaring white around you.
It's hard.
But actually, part of living your life honestly is also recognizing that it's hard, and you live with complicated, conflicted emotions. And I feel like for that whole first 6 months, I woke up every morning wondering whether I'd done the right thing.
Yeah, of
Every
course.
night, I went to bed realizing that I had. But I also thought, am I going to ask myself this question every day for the rest of my life?
Yeah.
And I realized in that second 6 months, no, I wasn't going to ask myself that question every day for the rest of my life. But I probably will every day for the rest of my life wish that it hadn't had to be this way.
Yeah, look, this is a weird analogy, but maybe it's not. It keep popping into my head, so I'm going to say it. The idea for a lot of people, and this is still the case in 2024, the idea of coming out is terrifying for a range of people and particularly in a range of communities and situations. The damage of being in the closet is also very real. That doesn't mean when they come out, they're going to be skipping down the street and their family will love them and everyone will be supportive and there'll be no consequences at work and everyone will just, that's just not reality. Will they feel better? On balance, I would say I've never seen anyone in the closet who's happy. Ever.
It's so interesting that you would raise that as an analogy, because there's a direct connection in my life with
Right.
that. Because I had a colleague around the time that I turned 50, this colleague of mine came out as trans, and I followed their transition journey closely. As a colleague and increasingly as a friend. And I realized at some point, watching them over really kind of the next year of their life, at looking at how courageous they had been and how much skin it had cost them, and yet at the same time watching them inhabit
Blossom.
skin
Yeah.
in a way that felt so real and
Yes.
so new formed, like that butterfly just wriggling its way out of the chrysalis.
Yeah.
But I watched that process from very close quarters with them. And then I realized that I needed to come out too. And that's how I realized it. I realized I needed to come out too. And what I needed to come out was as unhappy.
Oh God, that's like, honestly, that's given me goosebumps, because I think it's, we all get that inspiration from different places, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And you, I've seen this over decades, the difference that I see in someone like you, you know, a friend who, you know, you think, oh, everything's fine, but you can kind of sense something isn't fine, and then make this call and you've got to sit in the shit and it's really painful. And then something emerges where you go, oh my God, like you look younger, you look brighter, you look like all of the thing. And I don't mean in a superficial sense. I mean in a, like it's some kind of light, you know, kind of coming within and a lightness. And I see the same thing with friends, colleagues, acquaintances, whoever, who have gone on that coming out journey. And that does not mean, like, if we continue the analogy, the butterfly is still vulnerable.
Yeah.
Right? It doesn't mean that there's no pain and no consequence, but it's much, much better than in the dark place.
It is. And the thing is that once you've come out, no matter what you've come out as, even if I've come out as unhappy, then you have to deal with the fact that, as we said earlier, that that's now out in the light, and what are you going to do about it? And one of the, this is this, I want to bring this back to my professional life. One of the things that I struggled with at the time was, but who am I to do this to make other people happy in, or sorry, to how am I going to make other people unhappy in order to make myself happier? How am I going to reconcile that with the person who I think that I am, which is kind and generous and loving and do no harm sort of a person? And which is different from the nervous system response. I'm definitely a fawner on the 4F scale. Go straight to fawn when the saber-toothed tiger's coming towards you. I'm the one that goes, oh, here, kitty, kitty.
Yeah, it's all right. It's all right. So come here. And can I pick you up on something? Because I will forget if I don't. Do no harm. You're harming yourself.
Yeah. Yes, but do no harm to others.
Different.
Do no harm to others. And I struggled with that enormously.
Of course.
How do I do harm to others in order not to self-harm? And I have all sorts of self-harm kind of tendencies, including I've been a trichotillomaniac since I was 11, which means, for people who don't know the actual label, that you pull your hair out. It's a sort of on the OCD spectrum.
Yeah.
It goes with other things like skin picking. And there's actually a fantastic memoir that's just been released by a woman called Adele Dumont. It's called Pulling. And I've never read a book that has put to words what I have, the experience I've lived with for over 40 years now. So self-harm is definitely something that I excel in. But it was like, how am I going to do harm to others in the process of trying to work out how to be less unhappy? And one of the things, one of the consolations that I used, and I don't know whether this is intellectual consolation or not, but one of the things that I thought was, I know through my research and knowledge about the way that things were in the past, that women have been unable to make the transition from unhappy to happier situations in relationship to marriage for centuries, because they have not had the economic, cultural, social,
or legal
avenues to do so. So women just had to sit in a different kind of shit for their whole fucking lives, whether they want to or not.
Harmful.
And I thought, here I am, and women have fought for decades and centuries for the right to not have to sit in that shit.
Yeah.
For the right to have the legal, social, cultural, political, and economic power to be able to have some agency and control over their own lives. And I've documented that struggle in my in my books.
Yes.
So I thought, here I am, a woman who has benefited from the struggle of the sisters who have come before. I have the economic independence. I have the legal capacity. I have, I'm in a political moment that in and in some ways is actually encouraging of, you know, being your best self and and, you know, in a raising your voice.
Autonomy.
Autonomy. You know, there's a lot of language around, you know, there's no such thing as one-way liberation and no one is free until all of us are free. And
so I mean, take it.
Slogans that have been part of the feminist movement for a while now. But if I have this capacity, I do not do this.
Yeah.
I do not follow three. What does that say about any other woman who has less capacity than I do? I'm enormously privileged.
Yeah.
Historically speaking, and even in my own, in our own context now. I mean, there are women obviously still to this day who don't have the economic or social capacity to leave unhappy, destructive, harmful situations. Even if they have the legal and political means.
Yeah, but you do. And two things, you did, right? You did it. And you still remain, and I think this is really important in this conversation, you still remain kind. You still remain considerate. You still remain loving. You're still the mama bear. Your arms are still wide open. You still deal, you haven't fled. And I think it's really important for listeners to consider that, because I notice, and I've done exactly the same thing, I notice in your language, I notice in caller's language, in my own, I did this is a big weight of responsibility rather than this happened for a range of reasons. Right? That doesn't take away your character. You're dealing with this situation with the same grace and the same toolkit that you have dealt with the rest of your life. You're still, I mean, let's be basic. You're still a good person. You're still a good mum.
Thanks, Nellie. You know, the funny thing is that I've always wondered whether I'm a good person. It's probably the central question of my life.
Well,
I was, you know, in year 12 English exam, gentle boast here, I got 100% for my year 12 English.
Oh, hello.
And I remember only one of the questions that was given to us in that exam. It was the creative writing piece that you had to respond to a prompt. And the prompt was, we can't insure you for a journey like that. And I wrote a piece about coming home from school one day and saying to my parents, my mother and my stepfather, am I a good person? And they said, well, what do you think? And I said, I don't know, but I think I have to find out. And I'm going into my room and I'm going to spend the weekend in there trying to figure out whether I'm a good person. And can you give me some assurance that I will come out of this? And they said, we can't insure you for a journey like that.
That's
Claire at fucking 17.
17. Yeah.
And I reckon I only came up with an answer to that, Nellie, this year.
Well, and what's the answer?
Yeah, I'm a good person.
Of course you are a good person. You know who doesn't ask that question? A shit person. A bad person. It's like that classic thing. If you go to a therapist and you say, am I a narcissist? And they're like, well, a narcissist would never ask that. Would never turn up at a therapist's office. Like, of course, and of course you're not like routine, you're not like 100% good, none of us are, but are you striving every day to be a good person and bring Even just through your work, let alone seeing your mothering and how you are as a friend and all that kind of stuff, even just through your work, you bring goodness to the world. Like the people who doubt that the most, I think, are the good people. That is the great tragedy of that. Like, that's a kind of existential dilemma about personhood, I think. And we keep striving, but of course the answer is yes, Claire.
Oh, darling.
Really interested to know a very simple but pointed thing.
Okay.
Do you still believe in love?
Oh my God, yes.
Oh, tell
Oh,
me.
I so believe in love, but you know what I believe in now? I just believe in all the loves.
Yeah.
I believe in all the loves.
Tell me.
I read a book recently, Christos Tsiolkos's latest novel, The In-Between.
Oh, it's so good.
And it is such a good book. I think it is his best book. And
Yeah.
I adored that book. And the thing is, that book is about love.
Yeah.
You know, there's all the hot and heavy sex in it,
Yeah. Yeah.
and it, you know, it's raw and it's gritty and all the things. But actually, that book is about love.
And connection. I agree.
All the ways in which love can be felt and expressed, and
Yeah.
all many shapes and forms that it
Yeah.
can be found in.
Yeah.
And that just gives me absolute ultimate hope and optimism, and that, you know, you can get loving in a lot of places,
Oh, you really can.
and you can find love with people that you would not necessarily have thought that you could, and you can give love to people that you wouldn't necessarily have thought
Yes.
that you could. And you know, Nellie, it's a bit like, you know, when you have your second child, okay, pregnant with your second child, and you think you have anxiety because you think, how am I ever going to be able to love this child as much as I love the first one? And then that baby is born, and you realize that it doesn't take any love away from the first one.
Just
You just grew
expands.
a whole new love limb.
Correct. Correct. The heart expands, the abundance mentality. I mean, even going back to something you said earlier about friendships, like I really notice friends have always been very important to me, and I know they have been to you as well. But I did notice once I became separated, that part of my life became bigger. It was already big, but it expanded because that love that I had in my chest needed somewhere to go, and it came back to me and it grew and it's still growing. And even if it wasn't romantic love, like
Oh,
the
absolutely.
love that's there is, I don't know, it's an
Absolutely.
infinite resource.
It's an infinite resource. And yeah, to draw a couple of the points that we've been discussing together, and the way that when you do end a very long-term marriage, and people really want to find a cause, they want, you know, they want to be able to identify the cause, maybe so that, as you said, they can avoid it, they can drive around that pitfall. But something that came back to me from a number of channels was that people wondered whether I was having an affair with my trans friend.
Oh,
And
why?
because, and I discovered this later, is that one thing that my trans friend said that they think that we have is something that's called a queer platonic, that we are queer platonic partners.
Yeah, right. Yeah,
So
yeah, yeah.
apparently, if you Google queer platonic
Oh,
partner,
yeah. It's a
there'll be a
thing.
whole literature on it. And it's a
100%.
I didn't know that it was a thing.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
there is, I know what they mean is that there's a certain intimacy
Yes.
between us that is not sexual
Yeah.
in any way.
Yeah.
And I think of it as a very close friendship,
Yeah.
but people did read it
Yes.
somehow as it being romantic, because maybe that's the only way that they could figure such a love.
I think it's most common with gay men and straight women, what we would have in, the olden days called fag hags, which some gay men still use that term, some don't like it. And that is often misread as romantic. And I think it's often misread as the woman has fallen in love with him rather than kind of going, no, they are both in love with each other. It's just not sexual. Like they may even be, each other's person, soulmates, whatever you want to call it, twin flames, all the things. There doesn't have to be sex for it to be real love.
Exactly. And I think the thing that mostly I'm done with, Nelly, in the end is labels.
Yeah, me too.
What I realized at the end of our at my marriage is that I fundamentally wanted to de-wife.
Yeah.
In a way, I don't care whether we have a divorce. That's a legal nicety. That has nothing to do with a property settlement. That has that's annulling a contract, essentially.
Yeah.
But I did realize that I wanted to de-wife. Because
you wanted to be clear.
Because the expectations that are put on you with the label, both internally and externally, are ultimately very limiting. And I feel like if I were to enter another relationship, I don't even really wouldn't even really want to call us a couple, because I think being a couple comes with a whole freighted set of baggage about what that means.
Isn't language slow, Claire? I mean, you're a historian, but, you know, I just find language so slow. I had to introduce, I'm seeing Linda. I had to introduce Linda the other day, and I'm like, I don't want to say girlfriend. I don't want to say, like, I'm not 12. I don't want to say partner. That feels like we're, you know, running a law firm. And I was like, oh, this is my sweet pea. Like, that's the only label I could like think of that felt kind of right.
Yeah.
We need, I don't know, language has got to evolve in this area, I think.
Yeah. Or, you know, we start making it up for ourselves.
Yeah, I reckon we've got to. I'm going with sweet pea for now.
I think
you know
that's,
what?
I think
you
that's
are a sweet pea.
Oh,
you
God.
Are such a sweet pea. Thank you so much for coming on. Will you come back on? Because I've got a trillion questions.
Yeah, I will.
I would really love it.
I've enjoyed this conversation immensely, Nelly.
Oh, me too. And can you tell me, and I'll put links into the show notes, do you have anything to plug? I mean, you've got a trillion books. Do you want to plug any of them?
Well, I guess the book that would have most relevance to the conversation that we've had today is You Daughters of Freedom, which is about the Australian suffrage movement and most particularly what Australian women did next after Australia became the first country in the world where women won full political equality, white women, the right to vote and to stand for parliament, and then what the way in which Australian women then became ambassadors for that gold standard of democracy around the world. And that is the book that most embraces that first wave of feminist ideas of what liberation for women might mean and how to go about it. And I guess was the one that I had most in mind when I was thinking about what my responsibilities as a modern woman might be to that generation of change makers.
Well, lest us not forget for one second that those women, even in the most extreme of abusive and toxic relationships, could not leave. And I think that's an interesting place to start to reflect on whether or not you should step into your autonomy and make those decisions. Thank you so much, Professor Claire Wright. We will see you back for Sloppy Seconds.
Okay.
Thanks, Claire. Bye.
Dear Nelly, I could use some advice, dear Nelly. Yes, yeah, some help would be nice, dear Nelly. I'm eager to hear your point of view, dear Nelly. There's a lot to explore, dear Nelly, when you're 40 or more, dear Nelly. So I'm hoping we can talk it through. Dear Nelly, won't you hear my request, dear Nelly?
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, thanks so much for listening to Dear Nelly. Now, don't be shy. I would love to hear your questions and comments. To send me a recording or an email, go to nellythomas.com and follow the links. It's super easy, and you might hear me talk about your question in a future episode. Huge thanks to producer Sam Peterson from the Producer Boy Creative Production team, and to producer Faye Younger, who in addition to being an excellent human, is also a brilliant real estate buyer's advocate and can be found at youngerhill.com. Thanks to Acast and all the team. And lastly, to you. Without the listeners, I'm just a middle-aged mole talking shit to no one. Please rate, review, and consider subscribing for $5 a month for a bonus episode and to help me keep the lights on. And tell your bloody mates, would ya? I'd really appreciate it. Love yous.